Hi, welcome to the Brown and Happy podcast. In our time together, I will share what it means to be brown and happy. For many of us, everything looks good on paper, but we're still not happy and living fulfilled lives. It's time to change this, and I can help. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Gayal. Welcome back and a happy new year, everyone. Today we have Dr. Talithia Williams here. Talithia is a good friend of mine. She's a mathematician professor at Harvey Mudd. She is a woman of color. And to be specific, she's African-American. I love Talithia. I've been talking about doing this podcast with her forever. So funny story, we actually... I feel like we met at our gym, and we do here and there. I feel like we have kickboxing class together. There has been some spin classes, maybe some weights classes. And also, I did connect with her at like women's retreats.
That's right.
So this is kind of like, you know, where we met, but I've always been intrigued about, I call her the Neil deGrasse for women. Like she's seriously like the best and so smart. And to be a woman of color in mathematics is just blows my mind. Because honestly, we probably, if you look at her department, she probably stands out. And so I'm going to let her introduce herself. She's like totally embarrassed that I'm saying all these good things about her, but that's our job, right? To normalize saying good things about ourselves. So Talithia, please introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Talithia Williams, and I'm super excited to be here with you. Let's see. So I'm a professor at Harvey Mudd College. I've been there now, my goodness, 15 years. That's such a long time. I grew up in Georgia, in Columbus, Georgia, and really got excited about STEM and math at an early age, but I wasn't necessarily amazing at it. I was just like, you know, decent. And then some of my high school professors, you know, really encouraged me to go to college. I went to Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia, which is a historically Black college for women. And I really credit Spelman with giving me sort of the tenacity to really pursue, you know, mathematics and statistics in graduate school. I hadn't thought about going to grad school. I was so content to get a, you know, a bachelor's degree in math, and I minored in physics. I'm like, I can do so much with this. Why in the world do I need to go to grad school? But they encouraged me and you know, wrote recommendation letters for me. You know, one thing that I noticed while I was at Spelman, because there were just all these Black women around, I never thought twice about not being able to do math or physics or anything, right? It was like every math major was a Black woman. Every physics major was a Black woman. You know, and so if I failed an exam, I didn't think I failed because I was Black or I failed because I was a woman, because clearly there are examples of people who did not. And so I was like, oh, I must just not have studied hard enough. And so, you know, it really gave me a space to fall in love with the discipline and not feel othered by it. It wasn't until I got to graduate school at Rice University, where I was the only woman and the only African-American in my cohort, that I became so aware of my race and my gender. And I realized how it impeded my learning, because I'd have a question and I would hesitate. And I never hesitated at Spelman. I'd be like, oh my gosh, where did you get that? How did you carry the two? Where, you know, like I would ask any question that might've been dumb. I could care less, because all these people in this room, you know, were here for my success. And all of a sudden I got to an environment where I was the only one and I was hesitant. I was like, oh my gosh, is that a good question? Maybe that's a dumb question. Should I know that already? Did the professor already answer it and I just didn't hear it? And then by the time I have this whole conversation in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, did I miss the answer to the question while I was trying to figure out if I should ask it? And so it was just, you know, but I was so aware and so self-conscious that I'd noticed how it affected and impeded my learning. I finished my PhD in statistics and then went on the job market and landed at Harvey Mudd. And I've been here ever since.
I forgot to mention that she has this beautiful family too.
That's right.
How many kids do you have?
I have three kids, three boys.
Yes, that's right. Boy mama.
That's right. Oh yes, my goodness. We just passed those down, just kept passing down. Yes.
Yep. Same here. Except I realized that I need to get better quality clothes because my older one is so rough. So I was like, oh, okay. Like now I know that they're going to be using them. Do you guys like how we can go from one conversation to the other? And it's like that's normal. Right.
My third child got a whole new wardrobe because by the time it was ready for him, it was like, oh, you know what? These stains and these holes, like it's just not worth it. And
No,
so it
no.
was just like it was no longer able to be used.
Yes. So I say that because she is like, I just love how like smart and dynamic you are, but like she's so humble. Like I could see that she was just dying when I was saying good stuff about her. And even like when I was talking, and I think that there's something about humility that's built into our character. Do you have anything like that comes up for your thoughts about like, you know, how that comes up for you in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I was raised by parents who really espoused humility, especially I think, for me, because they could tell that I was talented. And it was like, that's great that you have talent, but you've got to be humble. You can't just walk in spaces like you're the stuff. I remember recently when I came, I surprised my mom, who still lives in Columbus and still, serves at our local church. And I had to be in Atlanta for an event, and I was gonna drive down to Columbus and surprise her. And so I'm on the phone with her, and she thinks I'm in California, and I'm all the way out here in Georgia. And I'm like, Mom, where are you? And she's like, Oh, I'm in the kitchen at the church. We're fixing, dinner for such and such event, right? And so I show up like with my video on and surprise, Mom, here she is in the kitchen, and we hug, and she's just, like, Oh, what are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah. Not 5 minutes later did I have on an apron. And I was like serving food. And no, they could care less about my little PhD. They were like, no one cares that. Can you refill my sweet tea, baby? It was just right back into this service, and I loved it. Like no one, they could care less that I was visiting from California. They're like, can you bring me a plate? I don't feel like getting up. I'm like, I sure can. And so I think we have to, I really want to make sure that my boys have that same humility where they're willing to step in and serve. No matter what.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? I think that, the people of color, right? I think it's part of our culture to
Oh,
have that
definitely.
humility. And then like women in particular, right? Like even in my family, I'm thinking about this. So it's like girl, girl, boy, I'm the eldest. Like I was encouraged to be humble, but my brother was taught to speak up.
Oh,
Yeah,
interesting.
very interesting. I think maybe this is like a little bit different for the immigrant kind of,
Yes.
story, but I think it was a little bit like, oh, like you as girls you do this and boys you do this, and maybe it was different for you guys. I do think overall culturally everyone should be humble. That's kind of like the mentality behind everything.
Yeah.
What I'm finding now is all the women are not like kind of owning that they are amazing and they are like powerful women. And so I'm trying to go into this, yes, say good things about yourself. You know, say, talk about your wins, talk about your accomplishments, because in this world, especially if in your society where you're surrounded by men, right, or in like these really high leadership positions or intense work environments, like you're gonna get lost in it.
That's right. That's right. So, where do you think, like, when did you know to sort of take ownership of your accomplishments? Like, when did you get that confidence?
It's not until I started doing the work that I do now. And until then, it's like, great. You know, talk, doctor check, family check, like all the things were check, right? Like all like, you always have to look put together, whatever it is, but you weren't going to talk about it. And I was noticing in like clinic and in our medical practices, like everyone's like acting like you're a dime a dozen, right? Like, yeah, we get another pediatrician. Yeah, no big deal. Like you're not going to get paid the what, whatever, right? And I'm thinking about this. And then I did the same thing in my home. I minimized myself. I sacrificed myself all the time because I thought I was supposed to, right? Like, oh, my needs come at the end. Especially as like a wife, a mother, a daughter, like that tends to happen. It doesn't matter that I'm an MD, right? Like that wasn't even a thing. But I do think that when I did experience trauma in my life, experience trauma in my marriage, I had to I had a chance to rethink, almost was forced upon me, but I really had to rethink, how did I get here? Because a lot of times in life, we feel like we're the victim and it's not fair, right? But what is it about us that led us to the point where we are?
Oh, yes.
People hate it. And I hated even hearing about that. I'm like, it is not my fault. This thing happened to me.
You know, right.
But you know what, Talithia? I do think that when we are willing to be open and learn how we contributed to our own circumstances, we are more powerful.
That's right. That's right. I was just talking to a family member and I had been upset with some of their decisions. And then I said, but you know what? I've enabled you. I've enabled you to make the decisions that you're making. I have to take ownership of that and recognize that while I'm not happy with this other person's decision, I had a part in it and acknowledge, that I had a part and I'm sorry too. I'm sorry for my enabling. Here's how I'm going to try to not do that anymore. Here's how I'm going to try to step back. You know, it's hard.
It's really hard to be
self-reflective, you know, and so critique yourself.
Especially if you feel like you've been wronged, you know, that is a big thing, right? Because, you know, in my line of work, I coach brown women, right? And someone would ask, what does brown mean, right? And I was like, any person of color, you know, and also I have clients who are not, but they also grew up in, they're white, but they grew up in a situation where it's also their voice was not being heard, right? Yes. And so they were taught to be the same way. So I do think it's important for me to acknowledge that, yes, I do specialize in coaching these women, mostly because of the similar lived experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's something about it. And I'm like, wow, when people feel like they've been wronged, and I am 100%, you know, in belief of this, we are so closed off to be willing to look at anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. You have to get through that initial shock and that healing to be like, okay, how did I get to a point where I was a sacrificial lamb in my home, that I was walking on eggshells around my husband? I was walking on eggshells around his family, my family, everybody. How did I get there? I could say everyone else is the problem, but then we're just where we are at, right? I need other people to change who they are for my life to be better. I don't need to do that. They can be who they are, who they want to be or don't want to be, but that's who they are. And I can still move forward, grow, live, and learn in my life. What a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. And to give people the freedom to do that, it really frees yourself from feeling an obligation to them in a certain way, you know?
A burden, right? To
absolutely.
Hold on to and be like, oh, my marriage will get better when the other person just shows up or participates or whatever it is. No, wait, you can have any relationship with anybody in your life, including your Starbucks barista, with your mind. And they don't have to know, and they don't ever have to change.
Because they may not. And then what? Right? What happens when you're expecting and hoping someone to change and they don't? You just hold that. What do you do with that?
They probably won't. And this is the thing that I like to normalize, is that people don't change unless they're doing the work. And if most of the time when women are coming to me, they're doing the work. Yeah. But their family members, their boss, their colleagues, their kids are not doing the work.
Yeah.
Right. So how can you, and I can even think about this even in the spiritual way too. If you're doing the work, you have the faith, you have, you know, all that, but everyone else is not doing it, it doesn't mean that nothing's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
It changes in your body, your mind, your soul.
Yeah. I like that. Oh, I like that a lot.
Right. I love talking to you because this is a locker room. We'll suddenly chit chat real quickly. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so good. But
this is,
there's a different
women's level. Locker room talk. I love it.
Yeah, I should probably call this episode locker room convo. But this is what it is. Right. And so I want to bring this back to how was it for you being a Black woman in a profession that wasn't known to be for women or women of color?
There were times when it was really isolating, and in a way that like no one was intentionally mean. No one intended to be exclusionary, but also no one was going out of their way to make sure that I had community, right, or a study group or friendship, right? And so often I think people see it as so, you know, it's just like, you know, did you have racist experience with somebody, you know, just, you know, outwardly mean toward you? Well, at times, for the most part, it was just a level of apathy that people just didn't, maybe I wasn't acknowledged, or I was, you know, I remember being at conferences and we would be walking in and out of different conference rooms or the exhibit hall, and I would always get badged. They're like, "Oh, ma'am, can I see your badge? Can I see your badge?" And it was just like, well, all these other people have walked in, but I'm the one who looks like I shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. I'm the one, you know. One time this woman kept thinking I was lost. She was just like, "Oh, can I help you get where you're going?" And I'm like, "I'm right, I'm here." You know, like, "Oh, you must be here for the other event. It's down the hall." I'm like, "No, I am here for the math conference. I am not here for this other," you know, but it was just the idea that I would be in this math space was so foreign to her that every time she saw me, she tried to help me get somewhere else because clearly I was lost. And so she had good intentions. Like, I don't think she was racist. I don't think she was like, "You don't belong here." But just, you know, at her subconscious level, she would see me and think, "Oh my gosh, this poor little Black girl must not be here for this statistics conference. Let me help her get where she needs to go. She must have wandered too far." And so those are the moments where I think the field of science felt like it wasn't a place for me. Right? It was just like, why am I here when the people here don't even see me? You know, one time I think I got asked to refill the coffee.
And why I'm just here, the people doing the coffee. Me.
What? Like, I'm just like, no idea where the coffee is. Like, but there was no apology behind it. There was no, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I assumed you must have been one of the servers. Never mind that you are dressed just, you know, in jeans and a sweater. I saw a Black woman and I thought you must be a server, but you're not. So who is, and where is the like, it, you know, there was none of that. It was just like, okay, well, if it's not you, who's the other, you know, what other person is going to get coffee? And the whole time I'm thinking, do you not understand like how disrespectful and just offensive that was? You saw me and your first thought was, she must be a server, as opposed to she must be a conference attendee just like me, you know? So those I think are the moments where I felt just like, why, you know, why be in a space? Why choose to build your profession in a space that sometimes doesn't even see you or recognize you, you know? And we talk about allyship. There has not been an instance where an ally has stood up and said something. Like, sometimes I'm looking at other people like, did you not just hear that? Can somebody other than me see that that was problematic? Why am I the only one looking confused that he just mistook me for a server, and everyone else is like, "Oh, okay." You know, I mean, and so even I think sometimes people want to do good and think that they're doing good, and in those moments they don't just take a second to speak up and say, "You know what, well, what you just said to Talithia was offensive, and I think you owe her an apology." Like, that would have meant wonders, you know, for someone else to see it. And so it has been a challenge. Nowadays I don't experience that much at all, but definitely coming through graduate school I did.
There's a couple things when you were talking that I wrote down, because I'm like, I just have to go there. Okay. When that woman who thought you were lost kept asking you, like, or trying to help you find your way, you responded saying you're fine, you're here, whatever it is, right? And she kept doing it. When you were responding the same way, she kind of kept the cycle going. I just think it would be really fun to be like, why do you think I'm in the wrong place?
Right. Yes. And I think at that stage, as a fourth year grad student, I didn't have those words.
No, definitely.
You know, I was like,
now, but you know,
I was confused. At one point I had a badge around my neck and I was just like, maybe she's trying to be funny because I'm literally wearing
no one's
the
laughing.
Conference bag. Like, no. You know, like it's got my name, no. You know.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah.
I remember being offended.
Yeah.
I called my advisor and I was just like, I'm not staying here. This isn't, I'm not going to put up with this.
You know? I'm just saying this because obviously I never would have thought of that then, right? But now we're like in our 40 somethings.
Right.
And I'm looking back on this, right? And I know people listening to this podcast could be in training, could be in these early years, right? Or even now experiencing stuff. And I want to, yes, we can talk about like all these things have happened, but like, I want to also look at these things like, how have we contributed to it, right? Like we're not going back to that. Like in that moment, you didn't have the words, you didn't have the dialogue to even consider saying something, but you know what? It could happen again, right? Where we're somewhere and someone, you know, thinks we're not, we don't belong. And I think it'd be interesting, you know, what would it take for us to ask the question, why do you think I would know where the coffee is?
Yeah. Yeah. So now I say that. That's the thing. That's my response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
I think it's like, it helps them kind of like break that cycle, at least because if you're like, I don't know where it is, I'm an attendee, they'll just, they didn't do anything that's wrong or offensive or whatever. And in this situation, all you do is questioning them back.
That's right. I was on a national committee once, and a person on the committee was just, we were talking about students, and this person was like, oh, I had a student in my class. My goodness, she was such a space cadet. And they meant it like, you know, kind of like she was an airhead and just you know, wasn't intelligent. But this person was at a prestigious place, you know. And nobody said anything, but it was obviously it was offensive, right? They meant it. And I said, oh, you mean like she could work at NASA? Like she'd make a great NASA, you know, employee, you know, an astronaut maybe. And I said it in all seriousness, right? Just like, even though I knew that wasn't what he meant, but I wanted to, like you say, I was going to call him out in a way that was just like, oh yeah. I mean, it sounds like she would make a great, you know, astronaut for NASA. And he was just kind of like, and so you could tell that he was just like, well, that's not, no, what I meant, but he didn't verbalize what he meant because he knew it was offensive. Right. And so just calling attention to it, put him under the spotlight and, sort of made him sort of retract a bit, like, well, I mean, you know, I was like, no, I don't know, because I don't refer to my students as space cadets unless I think they could work for NASA or, you know. And so I think it's on us sometimes to call out that behavior when we see it and, you know, when it happens around us.
So speaking of calling out, right? Like you were talking about allyship, right? And apathy, I wrote this down because I was like, this is so important. Apathy is a form of a microaggression.
Oh goodness, yes. Yeah.
I've never heard that, but I'm like, that is it. That's true. You know, like that's exactly it. And we can always try to be the one who says something, but I know you're gonna say this is true, but it's exhausting.
Oh goodness. Yeah.
It's exhausting, right? To constantly be the woman, constantly be the Black woman, the brown woman, to try to break the cycle.
That's right.
To reverse whatever's going on over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just love having friends, clients, like everyone who are so woke in so many ways and are like super hypersensitive to like, did I say that? Was that offensive? You know what I mean? But a majority of the people, like, they haven't had to even question themselves, right? Okay. And even if they could, they didn't, right? So if you're in a workplace where you see something stop, do the uncomfortable thing, and say something. Be willing to say something, because you don't know if that other person not saying something because they're early in their career, what their upbringing was, like what their situation is, but you maybe have that privilege.
That's right. No, that's absolutely right.
I think that as women, and especially women in places where it's traditionally been a white man space, like it's an uphill battle. It's a steep uphill battle, and everyone's fighting the fight, but it's exhausting. And when you can be there to support the person, almost, I'm getting like an image in my head where it's like this climbing up a mountain and then you're trying to get up there. But if you have people boosting you up, man.
Right. That's right.
You can.
I've been boosted by all kinds of people. Right. And so, other white men, white male colleagues who've been so supportive. And so that help can come. Of course, it comes from people who look like you, you know, but it can also come from allies who don't look like you, who, you know, from the outside would be the least likely to support. Yeah. Often, you know, end up can be some of my greatest supporters. And so, it makes for an interesting dynamic.
Yes. So I have an example of something that happened at my work when I was working at a big corporate hospital system that shall not be named. My chief, I wasn't hired, and it was told to me that I was a red flag that I took time off for maternity leave. But because it was more than the 6 weeks, you know, because I wanted to, my would like to feed my child with my body. And that was my choice that I want to make. And my place where I worked, I was seeing 50, 60 patients a day. It was crazy. And so it wasn't going to be a possibility. And I don't need to justify it. I can just say I wanted to do that. But yeah. I was working so hard, and they're like, oh, we can only give you per diem, which is like sub doctor. So I'm just explaining that to you, right? So you go hours here and there, right? And everyone's like, you're so good. Like, why don't you just work here, get a full-time position or part-time position? I said, I applied for one, and I was in urgent care on the weekend, and we have doctors from all over the area coming and working, especially on these like urgent care shifts. And it's funny how I got the most support from middle-aged white men.
Yes. Yes.
Because it's a department of women, right? It's like women on women hate, right? A lot going on. And so pediatrics is mostly women. And these guys were like, well, why don't you just work part-time and you're good to go? Like, and I was like, yeah, I didn't get it because I took time off to, you know, when I had a son and my husband was in fellowship. And he was like, well, what's wrong with that? You know, and honestly, just him saying that, like, it made such a difference to be like, how does that affect your ability to do things now that your kids are school aged?
Yeah.
You want to work part time. Why is it a problem? And I was like, I wish you were chief.
Wow. Why do you think you got more support from white men than, say, I'm assuming women?
I think that, and this is, you know, now that you're saying this, I haven't really thought about this, but I think that there's a level of like, well, I figured it out and my mom watched my kid and I went through it on my own. So you should be able to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I guess you have a privilege because you come from a dual income household that, you know, like there was like so much like envy and jealousy and just nastiness amongst women, which is mind-boggling to me. Mm-hmm. Like we could be of so much support to each other. And I think we noticed that in our communities, especially like, you know, like in our community where we live and kind of connect, right? But like in this space, I think also spaces like where there's like leadership, like everyone wants to one-up each other, right? The woman on top. And the men were like, no, your work is amazing, Bile. Like, why wouldn't you get the benefits of being a salary doctor? You've been here for so many years and it was never offered to me. And I can tell you to this day, I'm so thankful that it wasn't offered to me because Because of that, I was like, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm going to do a fellowship in integrative medicine, 3 years, like 30K out of my pocket to do a fellowship, right? And I trained. Integrative medicine is not a well-known fellowship. Usually you do fellowship, they pay you to get like some stipend, but somewhere like kind of like in the younger years, like we would do that. But here I was like, I did it from here and I would go there for, I did it from home, but I would go there for like in-person stuff. And COVID hit, so we couldn't even do it properly. But I did that on my own. And now I am not like a dime a dozen. Like the work that I do, like I do not know that many people who do integrative pediatrics in the entire area, you know? And then on top of it, because I didn't get that thing I was vying for, I ended up actually getting certified as a coach. And so my credentials that I have do not, no one has them.
I love it.
I am a diamond. I'm a unicorn, right? And I say this out loud, that I get to charge whatever the hell I want to charge for every patient encounter. It's a cash only thing, but I give them everything. I don't rush them. I don't minimize anything. I listen to them because no one owns me anymore.
Yes. Oh, I love that. No one owns me anymore. Ooh.
So good, right?
That is good.
Yes. Today, I was like thinking, like, my son woke up and he's sick today. And I was telling you about this before we started. And my little guy went to school and I was talking to him in the car. And I said, you know, if mommy had her old schedule, daddy's already gone. He's probably home for maybe 30 minutes of their awake day. And he just usually is at work. He likes to leave early, comes home late. And so I'm like, what would we do? You know, we'd have to give you some medication, hope for the best, and I would have to leave. I said, I have changed my entire career path so that I can have the freedom
to
care for you guys and care for my work the way I want. And I love saying that to him, especially raising boys. Talitha, I think it's so important. One day their partners and everyone's going to really thank me. Maybe I'm thinking for him, like, you know, mommy, I do see your sacrifice. I do see what you've done. And thank you so much.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. They see that, right? And you're right. We don't get this time back.
No, we don't get this time.
Yeah. So why just give it all away to an employer?
Well, honestly, I'm making five times what I did working there. But the only difference is I have to take a chance on me. I don't know when that's going to happen. I'm working on that, but I'm not making that a make or break for me. I have decided that I'm someone who is resourceful and can create something from nothing.
That's right. I love that. Take a chance on me.
I'm like thinking like ABBA and Mamma Mia is happening in my head right now, just so you know, like I'm obsessed. My family's obsessed. We went and watched a musical during Thanksgiving or Black Friday. We went, it was just so fun and we were dancing in our seats, but, take a chance on you. And I love Talithia, how you've taken a chance on yourself. You guys, we didn't even talk about this thing and we're coming to an end because I promised her we'll do around 30, 40 minutes. But I make fun of her because in our family, like my husband talks about Neil deGrasse Tyson all the time. And I was like, I have a friend. She is the female version. And she was on an episode on Nova on PBS where I was like, wait a second. I know who that is. Fred, and she's on screen and she's talking about all of the things. And so I really think you guys should check this out. So it's Nova on PBS, right? Did I say everything
right?
Okay. And Dr. Talitha Williams. So is there any kind of like closing thoughts that you have?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that being able to take ownership of the direction of your life, you know, because that's really kind of what I was hearing you say as you pivoted from your job to now doing something that really fulfills you. I felt the same way when I got these opportunities to partner with Nova and PBS. I was just like, I have not been trained. Like, I've got this very stable, predictable job as a professor. Like, I am content in this space. I do not need to be on the, you know, television screen for millions to see. And yet I have loved being in those spaces. Like, I've come to really enjoy, you know, traveling and helping the public get excited about math and science, you know, the same way that I was as a child, and not hate it, like most people do when I meet them and I tell them what I do. They're like, oh my gosh, let me tell you how much I hate math. You know, I don't want that to be the response. And so I've enjoyed doing that work, even though it was so unexpected.
Funny, when you say math, I'm like, oh, calculus.
See, exactly. You're like the people. Yes. You are the same as those people on the airplane that I sit next to.
Yeah, but I'm like, but I did do it, you know, and I was like, but my reasoning behind it was all like, well, if I do these things, then I can be a doctor, which is an episode for another day, guys. Thank you so much, Talithia, for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my God. We could do like a 2-hour episode. Like there's so many fun things to talk about. I would love for you guys to send me in some questions or any comments. I'll share them with Talithia. She is really a diamond and I'm so grateful for her to be in my space and to be a friend, and just be in my community where we can support other women of color.
I love that. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, if you're finally ready to start being happy, I invite you to join my list. This is where you'll have access to all my workshops, coaching, and pearls. Just head to my website, www.payalghail.com, that's PayalGhail, and join my list. I can't wait to meet you.